asking questions. Her quote, "It is significant that all the Prajetas were engaged in practicing yoga to concentrate their minds on the Supreme Personality of Godhead." There's only one line for quote today. Om Jnanati Nirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovisham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Tadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yatripatamaham Mante Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhuvaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So we are seeing over here, this chapter is entitled Narada Instructs the Prajetas, and we are going to see some beautiful instructions further on in the verses in the chapter where Narada Muni will be giving some instructions to the Prajetas. So these Prajetas, like we've been discussing over the past few chapters by various speakers every day, the Prajetas are the sons of King Prachinabadhi. And Narada Muni was the guru of King of their father as well. He was the father of King Prachinabadhi as well. Very merciful personality, as we all know Narada Muni is. And very, very expert in preaching according to time, place and circumstances. So his preaching was not like one set model and the same model he would preach to everybody. With Dhruva Maharaj, he had adopted a different side of preaching, like he challenged him, he tested him, he wanted him to go back home, and then he gave him the Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya mantra and the process of how to worship the Lord and how to attain the Lord to, you know, because that time Dhruva Maharaj's desire was to get a kingdom greater than his grandfather. So he tailor-made his preaching according to Dhruva Maharaj's desire and according to Dhruva Maharaj's situation and circumstance. And with King Prachinabadhi, again, you know, talking about the glories of Narada Muni, King Prachinabadhi was steeped in karma kanda. He was steeped in animal killing as an offering in the Vedic in the sacrifices that he was doing. So again, Narada Muni tailored made his preaching to King Prachinabadhi according to King Prachinabadhi's situation or his mental constitution. So then he talked about all the analogies, like that preaching was going on for such a long time. There were various chapters in the Bhagavatam, many chapters in the Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni was very patiently keeping on preaching to King Prachinabadhi. So he talks about the whole Puranjana pastime. He preaches to him through analogies because direct preaching was very difficult to get the message of Krishna consciousness into King Prachinabadhi's head. Because King Prachinabadhi was so covered, he was so steeped, like I said, he was so steeped into all this karma kanda and all that directly telling him about Krishna consciousness would have been very difficult for King Prachinabadhi to observe. So therefore he preached to him through the analogies of Puranjana and all that, so that the message goes into his mind. So after preaching to King Prachinabadhi patiently for so many chapters, we see like verses and verses were there. Some chapters are 70 verses long when Narada Muni was preaching to King Prachinabadhi. King Prachinabadhi actually perfected his life. And while this preaching was going on, the Prachinabadhi's sons, the Prachetas, at least that was one good thing which Prachinabadhi had instructed his sons, that go and perfect your life before you all become grahasthas and progenitors of this, because that time still progeny, like the material universe was still in the creation state, so that time they needed population and progenitors. But King Prachinabadhi tells them, go and perfect your life before you all start the duty of being progenitors in this world. So Prachetas are on their way, they meet Lord Shiva, who then instructs them, and that chapter was called as Rudra Gita. And based on those instructions, the Prachetas go underwater and they do tapasya for thousands and thousands of years. And after that, when they come out, you know, Lord Krishna, Lord Narayan himself gives them darshan, because he was very pleased with their austerities underwater. And he was very pleased that they followed the instructions of Lord Shiva so nicely. So Lord Narayan gives them darshan and he instructs them to get married. Again, there are beautiful verses exchanged between the Prachetas and Lord Narayan. And he gives them instructions that now you are going to marry Pramloja, who was an apsara, who was the daughter of the trees. So they get married. Sorry?
Marisha.
To marry Marisha.
Paresha.
Marisha.
Mari. Oh, this is Marisha. Marisha. Sorry. So he gives them instructions. Lord Narayan gives them instructions to marry her. And then they get married to her. And just at the beginning of this chapter, in the first verse, it is described that they are grahasthas. They become grahasthas and they are living. They have lived for thousands of years now. And in the first verse, we read over here as this chapter starts that now they have realized that, you know, we have ruled enough. We have, you know, produced enough progeny. We've got married, we've executed the duties of our grahastha ashram, and now it is time for us to once again dedicate our life to the personality of Godhead and the worship of the personality of Godhead. So therefore, in the first verse it is described that after they had ruled for so many years, they had been grahasthas for so many years, they put their wife in charge of their son, and then they leave home. So this is very similar to the pastime of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, which we see earlier in the Bhagavatam. So even Kardama Muni, after he and Devahuti have, you know, lived as grahasthas for many, many years, then Kardama Muni decides that it is time for him. Like, you know, Prabhupada always says that one should adopt the mentality of Vanaprastha. Although we don't have forests over here for grahasthas to actually go and, you know, live as Vanaprastas, because Prastha means entering and Vana means forest. So enter in the forest. So Prabhupada says there are no forests over here, genuine forests where actually Vanaprasthas can go and live. So Prabhupada says that, but that, you know, that constitution one should adopt of living as a Vanaprastha, and maybe go and live in Vrindavan. For us the one is Vrindavan. So maybe going and settling down in Vrindavan if a Grahastha situation allows so. So in the same way we see that Kardama Muni also did that. As soon as, you know, he saw that the time is right for him also to renounce the world and to go and perfect his life in Krishna consciousness, he actually put Devahuti in charge of Kapila Muni and he left. And we see then the beautiful exchange between Kapila Muni and Devahuti. So in the same way, the Prachetas now are realizing that the time is right, we've stayed enough in this grahastha ashram, we now want to leave and perfect our lives. So they put their son in charge of, like, their wife, you know, under the care of their son, and they all leave together. And once they have left, they go towards the west. And towards the west, on the seashore they settle. So maybe they went towards the shores of Gujarat or something like that, where the ocean is there, because Gujarat is to the west. And there they meet Jajali Muni, who then gives them instructions, further instructions on how to perfect their lives and how to perfect their Krishna consciousness. And in this verse we see, like in the previous verse we see, which, you know, Chandravalani Mataji spoke about yesterday, they are executing their Krishna consciousness through the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And, you know, the question might arise in our heart that Narayan himself actually came to give them darshan earlier on, after they had done their austerities underwater. Lord Narayan himself had exchanged so many beautiful instructions he gave them. And after that, why are we seeing that they are engaging in the process of Ashtanga Yoga to achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That question might arise when having had direct instructions from the Lord. Why not straight up Bhakti Yoga or something like that? But, you know, we realize that this is an age where the process for achieving the Supreme Lord was Ashtanga Yoga. And therefore we see, like Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and therefore we see them being engaged in the process for that particular Yoga to achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one thing we can remember in mind, when the Prachetas are doing these austerities of the Ashtanga Yoga, their goal is not to attain some siddhis. And that is the difference. Like, you know, people do Ashtanga Yoga, but their goal is to get some siddhis. Especially we see in India, there are so many yogis. And there are, like, now we don't have true Ashtanga yogis like we used to have in the olden days. But even whoever is doing yoga and tapasya in the Himalayas or in the north, when they are doing their tapasya, it is mainly to get all those siddhis, the Nima, Anima, all those different siddhis which come because of performing Ashtanga Yoga for years. However, the Prachetas, it's very clear that they are adopting the process of the age, which was prevalent at that time, but the goal is very clear, and that is to attain the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is also evident that their process was, the method or the process that they were following was bona fide and was right. Because in the process of Ashtanga Yoga or Dhyana Yoga, the concentration is always on the Paramatma, who is the Chaitya Guru. So if you know the Chaitya Guru or the Paramatma would have even felt that you know the process is not going right or the intention is not right, then he would not have actually guided Narad Muni externally. The Chaitya Guru from inside actually guided Narad Muni to once again come to the Prachetas and instruct them. So therefore, when we realize that, and Prabhupada also mentions in various sections of the Bhagavatam, that when we, you know, we do sadhu sangha and our process, our bhajana kriya starts properly, we start doing proper Krishna consciousness, or we start doing the process as instructed by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, Krishna will arrange for a bona fide spiritual master to come in our life, who will inspire us from our heart. So the Chaitya Guru will inspire us to then take shelter of that particular Guru, who Krishna has sent in our life. And that is evident from the fact that the process is being carried out very sincerely. And that is what we see over here. That the Prachetas are engaged in the process of Ashtanga Yoga. The Guru, the Chaitya Guru from within, Krishna has now directed Narad Muni to once again come and give them instructions. And in this particular verse, we see that as soon as the Prachetas saw, like Narad Muni has arrived, very mercifully once again to deliver. He delivered the father, but still Narad Muni is relentless. Like, you know, Srila Prabhupada was relentless. Like that Narad Muni is relentless in his preaching. He doesn't tire at all. He thought, you know, the father was a hard case to crack, but now he's come again to deliver the sons as well. So he has arrived to, you know, give some instructions to the sons and to give his association to the Prachetas. And the Prachetas are immediately getting up. In this verse it is significant to see that as soon as Narad Muni came, the Prachetas, even though they were in the midst of the process of Ashtanga Yoga, they were in the midst of their devotional activities, they immediately got up from their asana. So this is very significant to understand this particular thing. And in our Bhakti Vedanta class a few weeks ago, Keshav Prabhu was mentioning that once someone asked Samali Krishna Maharaj that when we are engaged in some devotional activities and our guru arrives or any senior sannyasi arrives, what should we do? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj answered that you should, if the guru has arrived, you should drop everything and you should first go and worship the guru, welcome him, offer obeisances, give him a seat and worship him accordingly. So that because always the guru is guiding us on how to do Krishna consciousness, and if the guru arrives and we neglect him and we continue our process of Krishna consciousness, obviously then whatever process we are continuing, Krishna is not going to be happy in accepting that because we are neglecting our guru. So that is what Tamal Krishna Maharaj told his disciples, and we see it is evident from the Shastra that even the Prachetas are doing that over here. And we see again in the pastime of Daksha, you know, that whole cursing pastime of Daksha that happened. We see that when he entered, he saw that Lord Shiva was there. That is opposite of what not should not be done. He saw that Lord Shiva was sitting in that assembly. And, you know, because of his pride and, you know, his puffed up ego, he was expecting that Lord Shiva should be getting up to give him worship or to give him honor. But Lord Shiva was engaged, always he's engaged in meditation on the Lord, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So actually it should have been the opposite. When Daksha entered, he should have actually recognized Lord Shiva's supreme position as the greatest Vaishnava and he should have offered him obeisances. So that's the opposite that happened, and we know like what are the repercussions that happened because of that offense which Daksha did. In the same way, we also have the pastime in which King Indra, same like Daksha, very puffed up because of his position. He failed to recognize his guru. You know, when the guru gave him a garland, he actually gave it to his elephant, who then crushed it under his feet. So he failed to recognize his guru. He failed to actually, you know, get down from the elephant and welcome his guru with the proper etiquette that a disciple has to follow when he sees his guru, which we see the Prachetas doing over here. So Indra had to, you know, then bear the repercussions of his offense to his guru. And on the other hand, we see Bali Maharaj. In Bali Maharaj's pastime, we see that actually all the demons, Bali Maharaj obviously was in a demon family. And Bali Maharaj, including Bali Maharaj and all the demons, they had become extremely powerful, mainly because they worshipped their guru Shukracharya very well. Prabhupada writes that even though that guru was not, you know, taking them towards Krishna and teaching them the process of Krishna consciousness, just because of their guru bhakti, they had attained lots of power. And obviously, Indra and the demigods Savan had gone down because they had failed to worship Yaguru properly. So we see that the Bali Maharaj and everyone was actually able to defeat the demigods just because of the power they had got of worshipping their Guru properly. But again, Bali Maharaj sets a very good example, being one of the Mahajans. So we see in the assembly when he is doing that yajna, and you know, Shukracharya is conducting the whole yajna under the eyes of all the priests who were over there. And that time Vamandev arrives, the Supreme Lord arrives over there. Again, Bali Maharaj drops everything to welcome Vamandev into his assembly, who had taken the form of a Brahmin, a dwarf Brahmin. So he welcomes, and at that time, when the moment was appropriate and his Guru was not guiding him to worship the Supreme Lord, he then rejects his Guru. So we see all these different nuances about Guru worship which the Bhagavatam teaches us. And these are very important lessons which we learn on how to worship our spiritual master, at what stage, which type of worship we should offer. Again, we have the example of Roma Harshana. So Roma Harshana, like the Prachetas, for them the process was Ashtanga Yoga, because that was the process during that age. Roma Harshana had been selected by that assembly to speak the Bhagavatam. He had been given that seat of honor. And he was sitting and going to speak the Bhagavatam when Lord Balaram arrived over there. But again, Roma Harshana failed to recognize. So everybody else in the assembly offered obeisances to Balaram. But Roma Harshana thought that he is sitting on the Vyasasan, so he need not get up at that point and offer his obeisances. And we see that he had to bear the repercussions of his action or his offense to Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram killed him mainly to set an example for all of us that how when an exalted personality arises, what is the etiquette that should be followed, which we see the Prachetas perfectly following over here. They leave the whole process which they were in. Whatever dhyana process they were following, they leave all that, they immediately get up and they give a proper welcome to Narad Muni. And when they see Narad Muni seated properly, only then they start the conversation with Narad Muni and they start inquiring from him. And we will see the conversation continue between Narad Muni and the Prachetas. And beautiful instructions are there in this particular chapter which Narad Muni gives to the Prachetas. So that is the essence of today's verse. How to welcome and worship your Guru, even if we are in the midst of devotional activities, how not to neglect the Guru, and what are the offenses or repercussions one can get if one fails to neglect his Guru. And today is also the disappearance day of two very exalted personalities. It's there in the calendar. One is Raghunandan Thakur and the other is Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj. So we will spend the next few minutes speaking about these two personalities who also, like, you know, signify how devotional service and how perfection of life can be achieved through devotional service. So both of these personalities were there during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. So we will first spend some time speaking about Raghunandan Thakur and then we will speak about Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj. So Raghunandan Thakur was born in the village of Sri Khanda. Now this village of Sri Khanda was very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the village of Sri Khanda and all the residents of Sri Khanda were very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, when the Rathyatra used to happen, and even when, you know, devotees, you know, during Chaturmas, just before Chaturmas, all the devotees would travel from Navadvip to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. The devotees of Sri Khanda would also go. And during Rathyatra, which used to happen in Jagannath Puri, we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there used to be seven groups which used to dance in front of the Rathyatra, in front of Lord Jagannath's car. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would expand himself and be in all these seven groups simultaneously, dancing with the devotees and giving his association to the devotees. So one of these groups used to be the group from Sri Khanda. And that group was led by Narhari Sarkar. And Raghunandan Thakur always used to dance in that group of devotees from Sri Khanda during the Rath Yatra for the pleasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there were two brothers, Mukunda Sarkar and Narhari Sarkar. There were two brothers who used to live in Sri Khanda, who were very, very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mukunda Sarkar was actually a physician in the king's court. And there are lots of glories about Mukunda Sarkar himself. He was a great exalted devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of Lord Krishna. In fact, one small pastime which is described about Mukunda Sarkar was, he was in the king's court. You know, he was a physician, so he was in the king's court. And he was talking to the king, and at that time he saw one of the servants fanning the king with a peacock fan. And when he saw the peacock fan, suddenly he went into remembrance of Lord Krishna. His absorption and his absorption in Lord Krishna's pastime became very intense just by looking at the peacock fan. And he started remembering the leelas of Lord Krishna and he went into ecstasy. And because of that ecstasy, he swooned and he fell down. And then the king was very alarmed. Everyone was alarmed, obviously, because he fell down suddenly. So then, you know, everybody revived him and the king asked him what happened suddenly. And he said, no, I'm suffering from, you know, some disease like getting fits or something like that. That's what happened to me. Epilepsy. So then the king was also very, you know, he had been in the association of Mukunda Sarkar, probably his consciousness was also purified. He realized that Mukunda Sarkar had actually gone into ecstasy, remembering the Supreme Lord. So this is how exalted devotee Mukunda Sarkar was, and he had his son's name was Raghunandan Thakur. So Raghunandan Thakur was born in an exalted family of Vaishnavas. So already by birth itself, he had been exposed continuously to Lord Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And during, while he was being brought up, Nardhari Sarkar, his uncle, Raghunandan's uncle, had a big hand in nurturing him in his childhood. He would spend hours and hours with Raghunandan Thakur, talking to him about Bhagavatam, teaching him various aspects of devotional service, engaging him in the worship of the Lord. So very nicely, Nardhari Sarkar also used to nurture Raghunandan Thakur. So there is a famous story of Raghunandan Thakur offering bhoga to the deity. So in the village of Srikhanda, there was a beautiful temple of Gopinath. And Mukunda Sarkar and his family used to worship. It was their family deity and they used to offer bhoga. It was their duty to offer bhoga every day at lunchtime. So they used to worship the deities very nicely, the whole family. But one day Mukunda Sarkar had to go out somewhere on some work. Again, this physician work, because he had to travel sometimes to see some people. So one day, because he had to go out, he actually called his son. And Raghunandan Thakur was only 5 years old at that time. So he called his son and he told him that today I have to go out for some work. So your mother will prepare the bhoga in the afternoon, the rajbhog. You please go and offer to Krishna. So Raghunandan Thakur asked him, how do I offer? He just taught him some simple mantras because he was very small. He said, you just offer, you know, keep the plate in front of the Lord and then you chant these mantras and then you beg the Lord to eat the food. And that is how you do this offering. So Raghunandan Thakur, very simple at heart, only 5 years old. So in the afternoon when the bhoga was ready, he took it from his mother. His mother gave him the plate and he went and kept the plate in the temple in front of Gopinath. And as his father had instructed, he purified himself, did Achamana, and then he chanted the mantras, simple mantras which his father had taught. And he then told the Lord, he prayed, you know, folded his hands and told the Lord that, Lord, please eat. And then he sat down for some time. And then he went and saw, again he opened the door, he went and saw that the bhoga was still there. So he, in his simple 5-year-old mind, child mind, he thought that maybe the Lord needs some more time. So again he went out and he thought, okay, let me give him some more time. He must be wanting to still, you know, relish the prasad. So he went out, after some time he came in again. And then again he saw that the bhoga was just lying like that only. So then he went and, you know, then it started, you know, raising like an alarm in his mind. So he started crying and he told the Lord that, my Lord, why are you not eating? Don't you like what has been cooked? Or have I done some mistake in offering this bhoga to you? Why are you not eating? And very, like, you know, with a very simple and childlike heart, he started crying. So then the deity was, you know, Krishna gets attracted. Like Prabhupada also says that even when we discuss the pastime of Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji Maharaj, you know, he also always used to say, cry for Krishna, because Krishna gets very attracted to these genuine tears of devotion which devotees had in their heart. So Krishna was very attracted by these tears and he then spoke to Raghunandan. He said that, I have accepted the bhoga, I ate already. Because you offered it, I have already eaten. So Raghunandan could not understand that. He said, you are saying you have already eaten, but I can see all the bhoga is still there on the plate. What have you eaten, my Lord? So Krishna explained the whole process of how he partakes prasad when somebody offers a bhoga to him. So he said that, no, when somebody offers bhoga, I actually eat it through my eyes. I glance at the food and I make it into prasad. But for Raghunandan's simple mind, he could not accept this. He could not understand all this philosophy which the Lord was directly teaching him. He said, no, I don't know all this glance and, you know, I can see that the food is still there in the plate. According to me, you have not eaten, my Lord. So he begged, he started crying and he begged to the Lord. He said, my father said I should offer to you so that you eat, but you are not eating, so you have to eat, my Lord. So then the Lord was very, his Lord's heart also melted. He is Bhakta Vatsala. So he said, okay, just to satisfy this, you know, young child, let me eat. So the Lord actually ate everything. The deity. This is the deity who ate the whole bhoga plate. And Raghunandan was so happy, he was in so much ecstasy that the Lord accepted his request. So he then took the plate, washed it, and took it to his mother. And he gave the empty plate to his mother. And his mother was surprised that an empty plate is coming. So she asked him, where is the prasad? And he said, the Lord ate it. You told me feed the Lord, but that, you know, like father had explained to me, I offered everything and the Lord ate everything. So the mother was completely perplexed. She was thinking, did Raghunandan eat the prasad and now he's saying the Lord ate it because he's a young child. Sometimes children are mischievous. But she knew her child and she knew Raghunandan is not that sort of a child. Then she thought, maybe did some animal eat it because children are careless, he was playing or something like that, and did some animal eat on the way and now he's saying the Lord ate it. So she was very perplexed. But she kept the plate away, and then after Mukunda Sarkar finished his work, he came back and he asked his wife, okay, give me the Mahaprasad of Gopinath. And his wife said, what Mahaprasad? There is nothing left. Our child has brought an empty plate back from the temple. So even Mukunda Sarkar was a bit surprised. So he said, what did Raghunandan say? And she said, Raghunandan said that the Lord ate everything. And he gave me an empty plate saying the Lord accepted whatever I offered. So Mukunda Sarkar knew that his, like, you know, he knew the devotion of his child. So he actually called Raghunandan. He made him sit on his lap. And he asked him, Raghunandan, describe to me exactly what happened when you took the plate. So he said that, you know, I begged to the Lord, I first chanted, the Lord was taking some time and then he was not eating, so then I begged, and I cried and the Lord ate everything, acceding to my request. So Mukunda Sarkar was very surprised and he thought that, let me see, like, because he knew his child would not lie, his child was not usually used to lying. So he said, okay, let me now see how this, you know, this whole miracle has happened of the Lord eating all the bhoga. So he actually called him and he said that, you know, take this laddu. You go and please offer this laddu also to the Lord. Because, you know, we didn't offer it in the first round, you now go and offer this laddu. So Raghunandan very happily took the laddu because now he knew how to make the Lord eat and the Lord had eaten the first time when he offered. So he happily ran to the temple with the laddu in a bowl and he again kept it in front of the Lord. But this time Mukunda Sarkar also followed him. Because Mukunda Sarkar wanted to see what is happening. What is this exchange happening between Raghunandan and Gopinath? So he hid behind a curtain and he was watching what was going on. So same like before, Raghunandan, you know, did the whole process like his father had taught him. And he waited. And the Lord did not eat, obviously, because the Lord had accepted through the glance. So again Raghunandan begged and begged to the Lord, please eat, why are not accepting this prasad? He again started crying and then the Lord took that laddu in his hand and he started eating it. And Mukunda Sarkar came out from behind the curtain and he embraced Raghunandan just in ecstasy, seeing this exchange between the deity and Raghunandan. And the deity did not do any trick because the deity knew, Gopinath knew that Mukunda Sarkar was watching, even though Raghunandan did not know that. So he did not pretend that he has not eaten, but as soon as Mukunda Sarkar came out, he stopped eating. So even today, like devotees say that even today that laddu is still there in Sri Khanda and many people go to visit that temple of Gopinath and to take darshan of that half-eaten laddu. So devotees describe, one is because Mukunda Sarkar came out from behind the curtain, the Lord stopped eating. The other reason some of the acharyas give is that because the Lord had already eaten that full plate which Raghunandan had just offered some time ago. So the Lord was very full and that is why he ate only half the laddu. He was not able to complete the whole laddu because he was very full. So there are different reasons given about why the Lord only ate half laddu. But the laddu is still there and, you know, devotees still go to Sri Khanda to take darshan of that temple and the deity and the laddu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he heard this, once when Mukunda Sarkar was visiting Jagannath Puri, he was very pleased to hear about this glory of what Raghunandan had done with the deity. He was very pleased to hear that. So he actually called Mukunda Sarkar and he asked him that, you know, your son is so glorious that the Lord, the deity, reciprocates with him and eats whatever he is offering. Who do you think is the father in this relationship? Are you the father or is he the father? And, you know, again Mukunda Sarkar's supreme humility comes out because he was an exalted Vaishnava. So very humbly he tells Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I am not the father, he is the father. Raghunandan is my father because he is teaching me through his example what is devotion to the Lord. Because I used to offer every day bhoga to the Lord never ate my bhoga. Because I was accepting the philosophy that he has eaten through his glance and all that. But you know, the Lord came out like, and the lady for me came out and he actually ate whatever Abhinandan offered. So, he is my father, he is instructing me on the aspects of devotional service. So, this is the exchange which happened between them. Now, when Raghunandan's, you know, this whole pastime happened, this glory started spreading all over Navadvip. And there was a very exalted devotee called Abhiram Thakur who used to live at that time. And Abhiram Thakur had a very unique quality. Because he was an exalted devotee of Gauranga, he had a very unique quality. Whenever he would offer obeisances to a Shaligram or a deity of Krishna, and if the deity if the Lord was not accepting worship through that Shaligram or through that deity, that means, you know, that deity was not being worshipped properly by devotees and therefore Krishna wasn't accepting the offering, even the offering worship, anything that was offered to the deity, that Shaligram, Srila or the deity would crack into thousands of pieces. As soon as Abhiram Thakur offered his obeisances. And in the same way, whenever he would offer his obeisances to a person, a devotee who claimed who was a devotee, but even he had an iota of material desire in him, that devotee would die. So everyone was very scared of Abhiram Thakur. That, you know, we don't want obeisances from Abhiram Thakur because what if we have some material desires in our heart, we will meet with our death when Abhiram Thakur offers his obeisances to us. So, you know, he heard like this, the glories of Raghunandan Thakur, and he wanted to come and visit him. And he also, one more unique thing about Abhiram Thakur was that he had a whip. And that whip was called as Jai Mangal. So, whenever he would offer obeisances to some devotee, and that devotee would not die because he was a pure devotee, he had no material desires in his heart, Raghunandan Thakur would whip that devotee in love. And that whip was so transcendentally potent, that whomever he would whip, that person would go into ecstasy. And the person would start crying, Krishna, 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 like that person would start crying. So that was another unique quality which Abhiram Thakur had, that whip that he possessed. So when he heard about these glories of Raghunandan Thakur, he travelled to Srikhanda. And he wanted to take darshan, he wanted to have association of Raghunandan Thakur. But when Raghunandan Thakur's parents heard that Abhiram Thakur is coming to visit their son, he was still a child, they got very scared. Obviously, Vatsalya Bhav. So they got very scared that what if Abhiram Thakur offers obeisances and our child dies? We don't want to lose our child. So they actually hid Raghunandan Thakur in some room and they did not allow him to come out at all. And Abhiram Thakur reached over there. So Abhiram Thakur reached there and, you know, it is described that Abhiram Thakur is actually Shridhar Sakha in Krishna Leela. That was his constitutional position, eternal position. So he reached Srikhanda and he went to the house of Mukunda Sarkar and he inquired. He said, I have come to meet your glorious son Raghunandan Thakur. Can you please call him? And Mukunda Sarkar, you know, even though he was an exalted devotee, his Vatsalya Bhava was covering him. So he lied to Abhiram Thakur. He said, no, our son is not there. He has gone out. And both the parents actually told Abhiram Thakur like that. So Abhiram Thakur was quite disappointed and he went on the outskirts of the village and he sat down under a tree over there. And he was just, you know, sitting and it was a very peaceful atmosphere. So he was remembering Krishna and he was chanting and singing kirtans, like loudly he was singing kirtans of Lord Krishna. And when, you know, these kirtans reached the ears of Raghunandan Thakur, wherever his parents had written. So somehow he escaped from that room because he got attracted to Abhiram Thakur's kirtan so much. And obviously he says, it takes one to recognize one. So Raghunandan Thakur was able to recognize that this is a great devotee who has come and I should take his association. So somehow he escaped from that room and he came in front of Abhiram Thakur. And Abhiram Thakur was so happy to get the darshan of Raghunandan Thakur. So Raghunandan Thakur was a child, he immediately paid obeisances first to Abhiram Thakur. And Abhiram Thakur had, the purpose for which he had come was to take association and pay obeisances to Raghunandan Thakur. So, he actually paid obeisances to him. And by the time, you know, the parents had also come, but nothing happened. Because Raghunandan Thakur was a pure devotee. He didn't have any material desires. So, he didn't die or anything like that. And then, you know, they embraced each other. And then both of them had such ecstatic kirtan. They were singing and dancing continuously, chanting Krishna's holy names. And while dancing ecstatically like that in the association of each other, Raghunandan Thakur, he was a child, so his mother used to put nupur or anklets on him, like Mother Yashoda would put anklets on Krishna. So one of Raghunandan Thakur's nupur actually went flying because he was dancing so ecstatically. And it went a few miles away, and there is a place called Akai Hut or something. And that nupur went and fell there. And wherever that nupur fell, it is even that place, you know, people actually excavated that place. And that place is called a kund. And they named it as Nupur Kund. So even now, that Nupur Kund is there, and people go to take darshan of that kund, where Abhiram Thakur's anklet flew in ecstasy and landed. So this was the exchange which happened between Abhiram Thakur and Raghunandan Thakur, to exalt the devotees recognizing each other. So after that, it is also described that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when all these three devotees, Raghunandan Thakur had become a little big, and all the three devotees would go to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like I said, there was a full team which used to go from Srikhanda, and they would dance in a group in front, one of the seven groups in front of Jagannath Rath Ghat. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave three instructions to this family. And those instructions obviously apply to everyone, all of us, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching us through the instructions to these devotees from Srikhanda. So to Mukunda Sarkar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that you are a grahastha, you are a physician, so you are a grahastha, and your duty is to earn material wealth as well as spiritual wealth. And use your material wealth to enhance your spiritual wealth. That means use it in the service of deities, devotees, spreading the mission of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, spreading Krishna consciousness. So that is the instruction Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Mukunda Sarkar. You are a grahastha, your duty is to earn wealth and you use it in Krishna consciousness. To Raghunandan Thakur, he gave the instruction that your duty is to serve the deity of Lord Gopinath. Eternally you should serve deities. That because Raghunandan Thakur was a brahmachari. So he said your deity, your duty is to worship deities and keep doing that throughout your life. And to Narhari Sarkar, who was, you know, Mukunda Sarkar's father, Mukunda Sarkar's brother and Raghunandan's uncle, he gave him the instruction that you stay here with me in Jagannath Puri and you help me spread Krishna consciousness here, through here. You help me in the preaching mission by staying in Jagannath Puri. So, preaching mission was given to Narhari Sarkar, deity worship he gave to Raghunandan Thakur, and earning wealth and using it for, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness, that duty he gave to Mukunda Sarkar, father of Raghunandan Thakur. So, these are the three instructions Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to these three brothers. Now there is a beautiful pastime which is described in Bhakti Ratnakar about Raghunandan Thakur. So once Raghunandan Thakur organized a Bhagavat Katha, it was the day of Ekadashi, so he organized Bhagavat Katha in Kirtan. And in that Bhagavat Katha, he actually invited Veerabhadra, who is the son of Lord Nityananda, and other exalted devotees like Srinivas Acharya, lots of devotees had come over there. So when Lord Nityananda, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the instruction to Lord Nityananda to get married, and he gave him that instruction, he also whispered in Nityananda's ear, Lord Nityananda's ear, that once you get married, I assure you that I will come as your son. I will incarnate as your son. So Veerabhadra is actually, you know, an expansion or an incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, the son of the glorious son of Lord Nityananda. So he had invited all these exalted devotees. So during the day, on Ekadashi day, they all had this Bhagavad Katha, beautiful recitation of Bhagavad Katha was done. And then in the evening they started Kirtan. And tumultuous Kirtan they did. Harinam Sankirtan they were doing. And it is described that before they started Kirtan, Raghunandan Thakur himself personally worshipped all the paraphernalia which was going to be used in the Kirtan. So he actually worshipped the mridangas, the kartals, harmonium, whatever was going to be used in the Kirtan. He worshipped all that paraphernalia and then they started the Kirtan. And the Kirtan was so ecstatic and tumultuous that everybody had lost sense of time. All the devotees were dancing ecstatically. And it seems there was a blind man in that kirtan. And he was feeling the ecstasy in his heart when he was, you know, hearing the kirtan, he was hearing everybody dancing. So he was continuously asking another devotee, now what is happening? Oh, now what is happening? Because he couldn't see. And he had intense desire in his heart. There was a desire that I want to see the beautiful form of Veerabhadra dancing, because Veerabhadra himself was there in that particular kirtan. So just by his mercy, Veerabhadra understood that, you know, this blind man has this desire, he is a nice devotee. So by his mercy, Veerabhadra gave him eyes. in that kirtan, and as soon as he got eyes, he was able to see that beautiful kirtan of Veerabhadra dancing along with Raghunandan Thakur and all the other devotees. And once the kirtan got over, throughout the night they danced in the kirtan, and then it was morning time, and it is described that all these devotees who were dancing in the kirtan, they all cursed Brahma. Just as in Krishna Leela, you see the gopis curse Brahma, you know, they want the night to go on and on so that they can do Ras Leela with Krishna. Like that, all the devotees, they curse Lord Brahma. And they said, why did you make this night so small? You know, it's over, we wanted to continue dancing in this kirtan. So that is how the night ended, and then Raghunandan Thakur told all the devotees that, you know how we also do, there is a fast breaking time. So he told all the devotees that it's going to be fast breaking time soon. Why don't all of you take, you know, freshen up, take a bath and all that in the Ganga and come? And what would you like to eat for Parana, it's called, for breaking the fast? And all the devotees said that we would like to have the Mahaprasad of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because there was a temple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu over there which Raghunandan Thakur was worshipping. So then all the devotees went to take bath, and at that time, from behind, Raghunandan Thakur prepared a beautiful array, feast for all the devotees. And every item was what which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liked. So he had prepared this whole feast for all the devotees. He made all the devotees sit down. Veerabhadra, Srinivas, Acharya, all of them he made to sit down. And he was personally wanting to serve all these devotees. And it is described that Narhari Sarkar, his uncle, had already left this planet by that time. But there was a samadhi which is in Sri Khanda, very close to where this whole pastime had happened. So on that day, his remembrance of his uncle was very, it had increased. So he wanted to offer some gratitude to his uncle, to Narhari Sarkar. So he took one plate of prasadam, which he had already offered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Devi, and he took it to the samadhi of Narhari Sarkar. And he went and actually offered this whole plate of prasadam to Narhari Sarkar, and he said that Veerabhadra, Srinivas, Acharya, all these exalted devotees are here. They are all going to partake this prasad. I do not want you to miss out. So he kept that tray in front of the samadhi. He closed the doors and he sat outside for some time. And then he opened the door, and as soon as he opened the door, he had darshan of Narhari Sarkar himself from the samadhi. Narhari Sarkar was so pleased, because like I said, he had actually nurtured Raghunandan Thakur in his childhood. So he was so pleased that he gave him darshan, and immediately Raghunandan Thakur paid obeisances to his uncle. And as soon as he got up after paying obeisances, Narhari Sarkar had disappeared from there. So this beautiful pastime is described in Bhakti Ratnakar. And Raghunandan Thakur lost control. He started crying and weeping in separation from Narhari Sarkar. But then he controlled himself, and he realized that there are so many devotees waiting for him to take prasad. So he controlled himself, took that prasadam, Mahaprasadam of Narhari Sarkar, and then he fed all these devotees who were present over there. And after this whole Bhagavad Katha pastime happened, he told them to wait. Please don't go away. Stay here in Sri Khanda for more days. Let's continue this Bhagavad Katha. So on the loving insistence of Raghunandan Thakur, all the devotees stayed with him for 3-4 more days. And after that, the whole Keturi festival happened, which, you know, we hear in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which was organized by Narottam Das Thakur, Chandra Mata, Srinivas Acharya, all of them took part in the Keturi festival. So it is described now that, you know, Raghunandan Thakur, he saw that all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were slowly leaving the planet. And the desire started erupting in his heart that he also wants to now wind up his pastimes and leave. But at that time, before he left, he had a great desire to once again go and meet Srinivas Acharya and take his association. And at the same time, Srinivas Acharya was also getting that feeling that I want to have the association of Raghunandan Thakur. So just by arrangement of the Lord, Srinivas Acharya actually came to meet Raghunandan Thakur. Now if we see in age and seniority, both wise, Raghunandan Thakur was much, much senior to Srinivas Acharya. Srinivas Acharya was the next level, you know, round of devotees who had come after all the Goswamis and all that. So he was much younger than Raghunandan Thakur, and even in terms of seniority of devotion, Raghunandan Thakur was much senior to Srinivas Acharya. But still he wanted to have his association. So Srinivas Acharya travels to Sri Khanda once again to give association to take association of Raghunandan Thakur. So they both pay obeisances to each other. And then Raghunandan Thakur reveals his heart to Srinivas Acharya. He says that very soon, because all the associates of the Lord are winding up their pastimes, I also want to leave. I don't want to live in this world for long. I want to leave and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his eternal pastimes. But he saw that Srinivas Acharya was like getting grief stricken because he would lose the association of Abhiram Thakur. So he says that you don't worry, Srinivas, you have a lot to accomplish still for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So you continue your strong teaching, because I can foresee that as Kali Yuga progresses, there are going to be people who are going to become very argumentative. People are going to become very faithless. They will start losing their faith, or they will not recognize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eternal position, or not recognize, you know, Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I can see all this is going to happen. So therefore, you please continue your strong teaching, and I bless you that you will be able to convert all of these faithless people into pure devotees of Krishna. I bless you, and I can see that will happen in Srinivas Acharya. And I bless you that you will have a long life so that you can continue spreading the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he blessed him like that, and 3 days after that, which was the day of today, Shravan month, I think Shukla Paksha, this is the waxing fortnight. So which was 3 days after this meeting of Srinivas Acharya, they had organized a Kirtan once again. And in that Kirtan, while Raghunandan Thakur, Srinivas Acharya and all the devotees were dancing ecstatically, suddenly Raghunandan Thakur started melting. And he just kept melting and disappearing and disappearing and disappearing, and he completely disappeared from everybody's sight over there. So that is how Raghunandan Thakur left this world. So it is described by the Acharyas that because he had intensely prayed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I want to now wind up my pastimes here and, you know, enter your eternal pastimes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in his heart and reciprocated with his desire. And that's why we see Raghunandan Thakur's disappearance in such a unique way. He just melted in ecstasy during the Kirtan, and he disappeared and entered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eternal Leela. So it is described that Raghunandan Thakur, he is actually the third member of the Chaturvyuha. His original position is that he is Pradyumna. And, you know, like we see even in Krishna Leela, it is described that Pradyumna is also, you know, an incarnation of Cupid. So even Raghunandan Thakur is actually an incarnation of Cupid or Kandarpa. And his eternal position in Krishna Leela is that of Kandarpa Manjari. That was his eternal position. Srila Raghunandan Thakur ki
jai.
So now we will spend the next few minutes speaking about Bansidas Sabaji Maharaj, who was also an exalted devotee in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was a contemporary of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So obviously he was not there during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, he was there during Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, which is hardly 300 years ago. And there is a whole special book which is there on Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. It's a beautiful book. So Bansidas Babaji Maharaj was actually born in Majidpur, in present day Bangladesh. So that time Bangladesh was part of India, East Bengal it was called, but now his birthplace is in Bangladesh. It was a village called Majidpur. He was born there. He comes in the lineage of Narottam Das Thakur. And since his childhood, he was very, very devoted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to Lord Krishna. So it is described that in Majidpur, where he was born, very close to his house, there was a beautiful temple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. And there was a devotee called Narottam Das Babaji. He used to do kirtans over there regularly, recite Bhagavatam. And since childhood, Bansidas Babaji was very attracted to him. So he would go and participate in the kirtans which this Narottam Das Babaji was singing. He would hear from Bhagavatam from him. And from childhood, his heart was really inclined to the devotion of Lord Krishna. So his parents got him married at a very young age, and Bansidas Babaji also had a young son. It is described. So he was a grahastha for very few years. But after that, he realized that he cannot live as a grahastha in this world. So he wanted to renounce everything, and he wanted to dedicate his full life to the worship of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore he renounced his wife, his son, young son, and he left Majidpur and he came to the banks of Ganga in Navadvip. And before he did that, he took initiation from that Narottam Das Babaji, who was, you know, in the temple which was close to his house. So he took initiation from him, and he also took Babaji Vesh from him. You know, during that time some of the devotees used to take Babaji Vesh. So he took Babaji Vesh also from Narottam Das Maharaj. And then he came and settled down on the banks of Ganga. And he was, like I said, he was a contemporary of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he had beautiful deities, and they were his life and soul of Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. So he had Chaitanya Gaur Nithai and Gadadhar Like we see in many Gaudiya Maths in Nagarbhimi, we see Gornita and Gadadhar worship together. So we have Gornita and Gadadhar, we have beautiful Radha Krishna deities, and we have the little Gopal deity. So his whole life, Vamsidas Savaji Maharaj had completely dedicated to the worship of these deities. And his daily routine is described in that book. So it is said that he would wake up and his full day would be spent in serving in the service of his deities. So he would first go and collect beautiful flowers. He would worship them, like bathe them and all that, appreciate. Then he would go and work, you know, get beautiful flowers, go out collecting flowers from the garden. And then once he would come, he would sit and string beautiful garlands for his deities, all the time singing kirtans. So it is described he had memorized the whole prarthana of Narottam Das Thakur, you know, that collection of kirtans and bhajans of Narottam Das Thakur. He had memorized that whole and he used to keep singing those kirtans for the pleasure of his deities. So he would make the garlands very slowly, very beautifully, and intricate garlands he would make. After he would offer these garlands, he would then go to collect bhoga, to beg bhoga from the village. And then, you know, he would bring all that bhoga back. And it is said that he would wash the vegetables like so many times, very meticulously he would wash all the vegetables. And then he would start washing the rice. And that rice also he would wash so many times. And every grain of rice he would inspect. And even if one grain of rice had little bit husk on it, he would remove it. Then he would again wash it. So like that, with so much care and attention, without any consideration of time, he would keep doing all these devotional activities. So by the time he would do all this and prepare the bhoga, sometimes it would be night by the time he would offer his first bhoga to Krishna, to his deities. And only after offering that he would partake prasadam. So full day nothing, he would just be engaged in all these activities and then only he would eat at night. So once, you know, he was offering bhoga at 9 a.m. in the morning. And there was another exalted devotee called Haridas Maharaj who used to live over there, very close to him. And he was a friend of Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj. So he saw him offering bhoga at 9 and Haridas Maharaj was very happy. So he came and told Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj that this is so good. You should be offering bhoga like this. This is a good time to offer bhoga. And Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj said, I don't know that it is 9 a.m. I don't have any of this thing of time. So actually he had been preparing the whole night and then it had become morning for offering bhoga. It was not that he prepared it in the morning. So he said, I don't have any consideration of time, and if these deities want the bhoga at 9 a.m, then they should make arrangement themselves. So it is described that Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj had mixed mood. Most of the times he had vatsalya bhav towards his deities. So he would chastise and, you know, shout at his deities many times, which we will discuss a few past times. And sometimes he was in sakya bhav. So he would have like fun and he would, you know, be talking to them and all. And sometimes he was in madhurya bhav with his deities. So, you know, he had all these bhavas, deep ecstasy, he would keep talking. It is described that devotees who were outside, they could hear continuously him talking with his deities, actually having conversations with his deities. That is how absorbed he was in the service of his deities. So, he told Haridas Maharaj, he said that I don't know about 9 a.m. and all that, and if they want bhoga at 9 a.m. to eat, then Gadadhar should go and beg for Gornita and he should cook for both of them and offer to them. And Gopal is a Rajvasi. Anybody, he can go and do Madhukari. Anybody will give him a cup of milk, he will be happy. But he said, but I have to do something for my Radha Krishna deities. Because where will they go? And that is why I am doing all these services. Because otherwise these boys, they can look after themselves. So that was his continuous mood, Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj's mood towards his deities. So once, you know, he had different pots for all these deities. He had a different pot for cooking for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, different pot for Nityananda Prabhu. So once, you know, and he never used to lock his house. He would just go to Madhukari and all that. And sometimes devotees would ask him, why are you not locking your hut? What if somebody takes something? And he would always say that, you know, I have 3 keys which I have given, so I don't lock, but those 3 keys are with these 3 boys, Gornita and Gadadhar. So they have to look after this house. You know, they have to look after, because they are the owners of this house. They should look after this house and they should protect the house. So he would never lock the house. Sometimes, you know, cows would enter the hut and they would like smash everything, and then it was, it's described that devotees would hear him chastising his deities for hours. Why did you allow the cow to come and see what havoc the cow created in the house? Like that, he would chastise his deities so much. So once the pots of Gornita were stolen, he had gone to collect some bhoga and somebody came and stole the pots. So he was so angry. He said, you 2 boys can't look after your pots? I am not going to cook today for you all. Till you all go and get your own pots and get them back, You have to become, again, vatsalya bhava. You have to become responsible in looking after your things. I am not going to cook anything for your meal. And he actually kept his word. He did not cook and he did not offer anything to Gaurvitai. So then, obviously they were hungry and there is reciprocation of the deities with Bhaksita Savaji Maharaj. So very slowly one person came and returned Nityananda's pot. Because obviously Lord Nityananda inspired him as in his heart, go and return the pot. So that pot came and he said, okay, Nityananda's pot has been returned, I will cook for Nityananda. But Gauranga, I'm not going to cook anything for you. So he actually again kept his word, he cooked for Nityananda and he offered to Nityananda. And it is described Gauranga Mahaprabhu was feeling so bad when he saw Nityananda nicely eating. So he was giving sidelong glances, forlorn glances he was doing to Nityananda because he was not getting anything to eat. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also arranged that his pot also gets returned. So that another person who had stolen, he came and returned, and Bhaktisiddha Savaji Maharaj then cooked the bhoga for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he offered. And after he offered the bhoga, he started crying. He said, do you think I like to punish you boys like this? Why do you all do like this? Why don't you all look after your things nicely? I keep the door open because you all are the proprietors of this house. So look after, you have to learn to be responsible and look after your things, no? I don't like to punish you like that. And he was crying and crying continuously for doing that to the Lord. But that was his bhava. He was like an avadhut. Nobody could understand externally what he was manifesting. And therefore Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was present at that time. And he would many times send his disciples, his brahmacharis, to with bhoga for Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj, go and give these food grains or go and give vegetables, fruits and all that. But he would strictly tell them, do not associate with Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj. And sometimes his disciples used to complain. He said that he's such an exalted devotee, why you are not allowing us to get his association? Or to go and talk to him and listen, hear from him for some time. So that time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj told his disciples, he said that you all will not understand the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj. Whatever bhava he is showing externally, you all will not be able to understand that because he is a Paramahamsa and you all are still in the stage of sadhana bhakti. So you all will not be able to recognize what he is doing and you all might do aparad against him, which will then spoil your, it will be an obstacle on the path of your devotional service. That is why I am warning you not to associate with him. And whenever the disciples saw also, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself used to offer obeisances from far away to Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj. So in fact, one day like this, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was going, Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj saw him from far away and he started calling out, A Manjari, A Manjari, like that he started calling out. And he said that now that this Manjari has come, Radharani will also come and then Krishna will also come behind him. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur just paid obeisances and went away. But obviously it takes one to recognize one. So Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj could see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is also a Nitya Siddha devotee of the Lord. So he used to keep his disciples away. And there was one more pastime which happened about a gold chain. So somebody donated a gold chain to Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj. And Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj then obviously offered that chain to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to wear. And again, he would not lock his house and that gold chain got stolen. And once that gold chain got stolen, Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj was once again so angry with his deities. So it is described for 2 hours continuously he chastised all of them. That there was this beautiful gold chain someone gave. It was looking so nice on you. I offered it to you and you didn't look after it. And you allowed some thief to come and take that gold chain away, like that he kept chastising him. Now you all have to tell him where that gold chain is so that I can get it. And then only after a few hours, he got that hint from the deities that the gold chain is with so-and-so person, some thief had stolen. So Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj actually goes to that thief because he was protective of that gold chain because it was being used in the service of Krishna. So he actually went to that thief and he chastised the thief and he said, you give that gold chain back. And the thief pushed him. So somehow Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj got the gold chain, I think. But the thief pushed him and that hurt Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj. He got hurt. But he did not say anything to the thief. He just came back quietly. But obviously he is a pure devotee and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not able to tolerate this offense to his dear devotee. So actually it is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that that thief died after that because of his offense to Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj. Another beautiful pastime which is described about Bhaktisiddhanta Savaji Maharaj was when he was once going to collect bhoga, there was a lady who came and she was a fish woman. So she was selling some fish and she came and offered it to Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj. And she said that today we have got such beautiful fish, please have it, please buy it. And it seems Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj himself was from a fisherman family. So his parents were fishermen and fisherwomen, and they used to do their living by catching fish and selling fish. So maybe, you know, Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj must have eaten fish in his childhood. So it is described, he became attracted to the fish when the fisherwoman was trying to sell him that fish. That this is beautiful fish I have caught, you should buy. So momentarily he became attracted, but then he checked himself obviously. But he became so angry with himself that how could I get attracted like this to the fish? So he stormed inside his hut and he actually went in front of the deities and he became angry with them once again and once again. He started chastising them and he said that when you all are present over here and I have been worshipping you all for so many years, how did this desire come in my heart? Why did I get this attraction towards that fish even though it was momentary? How can you all allow that to happen? When you know I am worshipping you, you are there in my heart, why did you allow this desire to erupt? So saying like that, he tied all the deities with a rope. And then he took all the deities and he put them in the Ganga. And he kept that rope under his feet, like, you know, holding on to the rope so that they don't, you know, sink to the bottom of the Ganga. And he sat there being angry with the deities and with himself for hours. And that's when, you know, the Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj Saraswati Thakur and his disciples were passing. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, don't, you know, judge him by these. Because his disciples were getting bewildered. How can someone do like this to the deities? But again, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur warned his disciples that don't judge anything, any behavior of Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj, otherwise you'll be doing an offense. So this is how Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj was. He was continuously absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, but he had these unique leelas with his deities, which from the external point of view might not seem right, but again he was an elevated Paramahamsa devotee. So Haridas Maharaj, who was his contemporary and his friend, he used to always say, because Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj always used to only wear popin. He was not wearing any other dress. He was a Babaji and he would be in that Babaji vesh where he would just wear popin. So Haridas Maharaj told him that why are you only wearing popin? Why are you not wearing any bahir vesh? Bahir vesh means external dress. And Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj replied that I know only ka. So I know popin, I know kamandalu or that kara, which was his wedding bowl, and kankha means kanthimala. I don't know anything about ba. Ba means bahirvas. Bahirvesh. So, you know, again, Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj was instructing through this pastime that don't go by externals, because he was not wearing an external dress or he was not using any Bahirvesh, but that was because he was internally completely on the platform of, you know, being absorbed in Krishna's leelas. So that is another thing he was teaching, don't go by externals, because many people used to assume that he is crazy and he is mad. He used to live in isolation on the banks of Ganga, nobody would associate, he wouldn't associate rather with anybody much. And everybody used to think he is crazy. And he used to speak in an ancient, like it was called Myanmar or something like that, some ancient dialect of Bengali he used to speak, which even today's Bengalis might not understand properly. So he used to talk to his deities in that language. And it is described that when he would speak, it would be very tuta-futa. Tuta-futa means very broken language. He wasn't very eloquent when he would have conversations with people. But it is described when he would speak Bhagavatam or philosophy, he would be able to speak it so eloquently. Mother Saraswati would come on his tongue probably and, you know, just eloquently he used to speak. So that is how his behavior was. Externally he was completely like looking like a mad person, but internally he was a Paramahamsa devotee of the Lord, dedicated his life to the worship of his deities. So we'll end the class here. Those were the glories of Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj. Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj ki
jai.
Any questions or comments or additions? Thank you very much. Vantashina Bhagavati, Jai. Jai.